Blog Talk Radio.
Just ask me the questions you want to know. Go ahead and ask me.
Well, first off, Jimmy, tell us about how you got started with the Young Singers, the Young Senators. Were you the starter of that group, or were you just singing in that group? Tell us a little bit about the Young Senators.
Oh, we've gone way back now. I was the featured vocalist of the group. Margie Clark, the late Margie Clark, was a member too. You know, she was a member of that group too, and we used to do duets together, like "I'm Gonna Make You Love Me" by the Temptations and the Supremes. We used to do that song together, and it one thing grew to another thing, and they liked what they heard, and we took it on the road. Mm-hmm.
Wow! But you started singing in Washington D.C. as a singing group around town. How did you get to be hooked up with Eddie Kendrick?
Oh man, that's a beautiful story. I was always a Temptation fanatic when I was a teenager. When I first heard their song, Dream Come True, that tenor voice captured me. I mean, I was hooked. And I would see them, you know, live at the Howard Theater. Somebody said, "Jimmy, it's a guy sound just like you." Just like me? I said, "No, nah, man, ain't nobody sound like me." So sure enough, I went to the Howard Theater and quit the Motown Review. And, boy, I bucked that show and saw it always at 12 midnight. You know, you stayed in the show and you saw a movie and all that. So I saw the movie and all that and wait till the Temptations came on. And, boy, I was flabbergasted, man. In other words, I sound like him. He didn't sound like me. So I watched him and I studied him. I studied him. And I went and bought the records and I just was addicted to him, you know, just like that. And I had an opportunity to go with the Temptations, to be a part of the group, but I turned it down because I was pledged my allegiance to the Young Senators. Now, they flew me to California and gave me a suite all by myself and everything, and I just couldn't do it. It was my soul, you know, wouldn't do it. But if I didn't have my soul, I would have jumped the first thing, you know, I would have done it. But my soul was eating me up, so I said, no, I couldn't do it. So I was there from Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I left. You know, I called Otis and said, "Otis, I don't think I can do it." And he said, "Jimmy, I felt you, and I appreciate your honesty." And I said, "Well, thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity." And that was that. Mm-hmm. That's short, but like I said, you know, I can prolong it if you want me to, but I'd rather not. You know, just keep it simple. Keep it simple.
Basically, though, you being part of the Temptations about Eddie Kendrick, were you there when he split from the Temptations and became on his own? Did you still keep in contact with him once he became a solo artist?
Yes, I was with him when he left the Temptations. See, I had met the Temptations when Eddie was with the group. They was appearing at the Carter Baron, and I went to see them. And by myself, you know, I had holy boldness about myself. I went down there by myself, so I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to say when I met him, you know. So when I met him at the stage gate, they had a big gate down there, you know, you go to the backstage. So standing there, so he said, he walked up the front, everybody started hollering and screaming, and he said, "Jimmy Dugan." I forgot my name. So I said, right here. So he said, "Come on, little brother." So I walked in and walked downstairs to the dressing room with him. And I was scared shitless, excuse the expression. I was scared. I was nervous. And I just said, I just had to go. I just couldn't find anything to say. As much as I love to talk, I just didn't know what to say. And I was young then, but anyway, I told him we had to do a show at Burn Manor. And he said, somebody said, "Oh, I know what that is." He said, "Okay, well, Jimmy, I'm coming out there." And I didn't think he was serious. So later on that night when I left there, I went straight to the gig. The gig is a performance where we're doing the show at. So I said, I told the guys who was at the door, the Robbing 15, I said, "Look, Eddie Kennedy's coming out here tonight." And they all laughed at me. They thought, you know, I kind of didn't believe it myself. But anyway, he said he was going to come out there and check us out. So we was on stage performing, and I saw this gathering of people at the front and was working their way to the stage. I said, "What is this?" So, you know, just looking, seeing all these people come to the front, move to the front. So I said, "What's going on?" So I forgot that Eddie was coming out there. So him and Paul and Cornelius Grant, the guitar player, and a bodyguard, and somebody else came with him. I forgot who it was, but he couldn't stay. He said, "Jimmy, I can't stay. Meet me over at the Watergate." I said, "Watergate? Yeah, he said, I'm staying at the Watergate." And all these people were gathering around, man. They was acting crazy. Now, wasn't nobody fighting or pushing and shoving or nothing like that, but they just wanted to reach him, you know, touch him. But he had to get out of there. So I said, "Okay." So later on that night when our gig was over, it was at 10 to 2. And one of those gigs where we're playing go-go's were always 10 to 2. So anyway, at 2 o'clock, I said, "Frank, come on, go with me over to the Watergate." He said, "What's happening?" I said, "Eddie wanted to come over to the Watergate. I don't know. Get over there and talk. That's some fun." So I got Frank, and he rode over there with me. And sure enough, when I knocked on the door, a group was there with him, the Counts, a group from Washington, Bad Boys, man, called the Counts. So He said, "What you doing here, Jimmy?" I said, "Eddie told me to come over here. I don't know." So Eddie came and said, "Oh, let him in." So finally he let me in, and we sat down and we talked. We talked from, I think it was about 5 o'clock till the sun came up, and we talked about the music industry, about what he wanted to do. And he was still with the Temps then. He was still with the Temptations, and I gave him my phone number. And quite naturally, he called me sometime and everything. But he was always unhappy. And I tried to pick him up. I didn't know what was going on. So I said, "Man, come on, you got to pull yourself together, man." So he said, "Man, I'm talking about leaving." I didn't know what we're talking about. Leaving. Leaving what? He was talking about leaving the group, quitting the group. I said, "Oh, man, you shouldn't do that." So he made up his mind. It took about 2 months. He made up his mind. Then he quit the Temps. And boy, was I shocked. And he called me and said, "Man, have you heard the news?" I thought somebody had died. I said, "No, who passed?" He said, "It might as well pass." He said, "I just quit the Temps." I said, "Whoa, what you going to do now?" And then he said, "I need a band." And me, hot-headed as I was then, you know, I said, "You got a band." He said, "You mean y'all are back yet?" "Yeah, I went out on a limb on this." I said, "Yeah, we back you up." And from that moment on, we were hooked with Eddie. Mm-hmm. And that's basically
that was an excellent, excellent opportunity where you got to play behind Eddie Kendricks. You got to go on tour and play behind him.
Come on, man. Yes, sir, buddy. You're talking about
that was a serious. And you got a chance to meet Paul Williams in person?
Yes, and David Ruffin, all of them. Man, look, Paul, Eddie, and David went on tour, the three of them, and we used to back them up. I got tapes I can let you hear. man, with David Ruffin, and the women used to just faint on stage. They would run to the stage and just collapse. We did a show somewhere. I forgot where this was. Was it Detroit somewhere? Women, where there's so many women, they just came on stage and collapsed, fainted. And, man, it was shocking to us, you know.
By you being in a singing group like the Young Senators, mm-hmm. and you know you're familiar
yes.
with singing groups, what
yes.
what is the problem, or what seems to be, what happens to singing groups when they have such an awesome group making good music?
Uh-huh.
Why do they pull apart? Why does it disperse? What brings that? I mean, I can't understand. I'm not a singer, so I'm not in that vein. But you're part of that vein. What brings
yes.
that kind of dissension where they break up like that? What causes that?
I can say one word: egos. Egotistical egos. Egos. That's why groups don't last that long. That's why they're one-hit wonders, because somebody within the group went against the core. When you're a group and be one as a group, it's not going to work any kind of way. You bring your attitude in there, your disposition, and it's not fitting, it's not going to work. That's why a lot of these groups, I say for one, our group, the Young Senators, it was egos. I hate to say it, but it's true. It was egos that busted up, and I was trying to keep the group together. Come on, man, you know, put that aside and all this. Man, come on, Eddie gonna do for us. Just give him time. They jumped the gun. And when you jump the gun, man, it don't mean that you're gonna make it. But if one for all and all for one, that's the Three Musketeers. You use that philosophy in anything you do today. If you got a company, everybody got to be on one accord. One accord means we walk together, we pray together, we do the music together, and we have fun together. If it's not that, it's not going to work. Now, I'm speaking from the heart. I'm speaking from the heart.
Well, you know what you're talking
heart,
about, because
yes,
you had a group. You had a group, and the Young Senators was
yes,
a great group, and because of egos or
group.
Because someone – and but here's what my thing is. Over the years mm-hmm. – I've seen so many awesome groups, and they broke
yes.
up, and they put
yes.
somebody else in place, and then you come up. Here's what gets me, Jimmy,
mm-hmm.
is as the years go on, they make up a group. They
yeah.
get one person that was in the group and call that group the group. I said, what is up
yeah.
with that? How you go? There's only one guy that was actually in the group, but he got his own group, and we're going to call him the New Stylistics. We're going to call him like Dennis Edwards had to think. Dennis Edwards, they start doing
yeah.
stuff like that. What causes that?
Again, I say the key word in that whole ostrich of everything is ego. Ego, egotistical ego. That's all it is. I ain't going to say who within the band, but, you know, this attorney, Louise West, she was a big attorney in Washington. She came to see us at Ed Murphy's Supper Club, and we were playing. And she said, you know, that guy there, pointed out, I ain't going to say his name, he should be in the center stage. He should be in the center of the stage. And from that moment on, it was egotistical all the way. Instead of, no, I'm happy where I am. You know, that's what he should have said. I'm happy where I am. I ain't going to stand in front of nobody, nor get in front of nobody. I ain't going to block nobody's view. I'm just going to stay where I am. But he wasn't like that. He just went on and spoke his heart in his mind. But it just didn't seem right. You know, he goes from the left side of the stage, put him in the middle of the stage, the center of the stage. All the attractions go to him. But see, all of us could sing. It wasn't one set singer in
but
the
I'm
group.
But I'm saying to you, if you got somebody, mm-hmm. hey, say somebody goes from the center of the stage, from the left side of the stage to the center of the stage,
mm-hmm.
and say
right.
he could really sing, or say he's a draw,
yes.
or he's, the group is still, like I noticed some,
right.
like some groups, they say, hey,
uh-huh.
they start out, like for instance, Hal Melvin the Blue Notes, okay. Hal
yeah,
Melvin,
yeah.
that was his group. But when
yes,
Teddy Pendergrass started to be singing,
yes,
they let him come out, and people thought that Hal Melvin was Teddy Pendergrass, but they still
absolutely.
Was making money. The group was still successful. Why would that be a problem?
egotistical ego. Ego's in charge. That's one T word. Ego, huh? Ego.
I hear
ego,
you,
man. It's ego. I can't.
That's crazy, though. So many groups that did not last because of that one word,
brother,
ego. But
we came up in an era where there's nothing but bands, 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 bands. Every last band had an egotistical person within the group. Some were cool, like Sly and the Family Stone. He's cool. That was his group. He put the group together. Why wouldn't the emphasis put on him? We understood that. But see, somebody in the background will outshine him and say, hey, I think I should be the star of the show. No, brother. Sit down. Sit down. And that's one thing about us. That's one thing about us. We knew how to dip it in the bud. Dip it in the bud. No. You didn't start out with the lead singer of the group and blah, 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 all this stuff. Wait your turn. When it's your turn, we all can say, hey, he earned that. But then you just go, bogard your way through. No, brother, they ain't going to get it. Everybody's got to be on one accord. You got to be on one. You say it's your group. You got to be a group. Act like a group. Be a group. You know,
got some bands that withstand the test of time, like Frankie Beverly and Maze.
Yes.
They've been together 35, 40 years, and
good,
they
good
never
good
had any problems. And then you have people like the OJs, 50 years.
Yes, sir.
Never
brother,
been no
you
problem, you know.
It. That's what I'm saying. See, these are old season groups you mentioned. Old season groups. You get the new groups out here, and I ain't saying anything about rap music and all that, but they come out the box. Everybody on stage, 40 mics. 40 mics. They're up there, everybody yelling.
You got that right, though.
Stage.
You go to a rap concert, everybody got a mic.
Everybody got a mic. Everybody want to shine. And everybody can't sing. Everybody can't talk. Everybody can't rap. But they doing their best to do what they do. And they trying. Man. God bless them. They trying. But, man, they trying ain't getting it.
Well, but, Jimmy, you have honored people in the past. You have gave people their props. I was able to get one of the awards. I mean the Keep
Thank
on Trucking Award. Tell us about
and
how you
deserve.
Started the Keep on Trucking Award.
Okay.
Tell
I
us about
started
how you started the Keep on Trucking Award.
Sure. I started that with the Eddie Kendricks Memorial Foundation Incorporated. I was incorporated in Washington, D.C. So how I came up with that, he had a song, a hit song called Keep on Trucking. Something told me, make an award, a Keep on Trucking award. And that made a lot of sense. So I got on my computer, and I did the artwork for it, and I laid it out. And I said, yeah. Then I got a corporation seal. I sealed it and make sure it was legit. It's legit. And there you have it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was able to receive my award October 7th, 2016.
Come on,
man. That was awesome. But I've seen you give the award to other recipients and people.
Yes.
What you're doing and what you have done, keeping Eddie Kendricks' legacy alive. You had an event one time at the Martin Luther King Library.
Yes,
and
yes, sir.
I was there as a magazine to cover it.
Yes, sir. But you know, I hate to bring this up, but I got it because what I'm doing is telling the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Look, his daughter, Ika Kendrick, she put a dent in that. She didn't. She put a halt in it. She stopped me from doing it. You know, I wasn't making no money. What I was doing was giving something back to the community. It was only in Washington, D.C. I would do it once a year. June 11th is Eddie Kendricks Day. I got this letter from some attorney representing her. Well, I called Robert, that's his brother, Robert Kendrick, who was our road manager. I said, Robert, what is this stuff here about Ika trying to sue me for doing this Eddie Kendricks thing. What's up with her? I had the approval from his brothers, Charles, Clarence, and Robert, and from his mother when she was here before she passed. I got the blessings from her to do it. I had the blessing from the family. And they said, sure, yeah, Jimmy, go ahead. Who better else can do it but you? I thought about it, and I went on and did it. So I wouldn't listen. Everything came out of my own pocket. Everything.
What was she suing you for? What was the gist of the suit? I don't understand this. Wait a minute now. You was doing this thing called the Eddie Kendricks Day.
That's
right. And what was she suing you for?
For any type of income. She's money hungry. Every type of income, she tried to get a hand on it. She put a block on everything I did. I couldn't do it no more. I could have stood up, got on the attorney, that would have cost me money, and countersued her. But see, I didn't have that kind of money then.
Right.
I didn't have the money, and I wasn't thinking clearly.
Well, she thought she was making devastated. Money with it? She thought she was making some money?
Everything I did, I didn't make no money. I even had witnesses. People at the library was in my corner. I contacted them. They wrote a nice letter, sent it to the girl. The D.C. correctional system sent me a letter that I was doing this out of my own pocket. My own pocket. She couldn't understand it. You know, she was money hungry.
There was no money to be got, so she got no money, right?
I tell you what, if you ever seen Unsung, Eddie Kendricks Unsung, I was supposed to have been on that, yours truly. I was supposed to have been on there. She came on there, moved me out the picture all the way.
How did she get you out the picture? When you was a road manager, how could she get you out of the Unsung? How could she do that?
She was his daughter. I was no kin to Eddie. I had the brothers all backing me, Robert, Charles, and Clarence, and his sister, Patricia, and his mother. All five of them backed me up. They had my back. But she had a lawyer, didn't know me from Adam, and so forth. When I was supposed to have done the Unsung, Eddie Kendricks section, I was supposed to have been on there. They interviewed me and Abbas and all this and that. She came along, wiped me all the way out. She had you cut out of the segment. Yes, she took me all the way out. All the way out of that Eddie Kendricks, best of Eddie Kendricks, whatever, Unsung. I didn't mind. Because it was a bunch of confusion. I didn't mind it. I said, you can have it. And walked away.
Well, this is what it's about, man.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it's about, Jimmy. We're talking about pulling your eyelids open. See, people don't know the history of what people are going through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this show, this podcast is so relevant. Because we pull the eyelids open. Now people can see what actually took place. Because basically...
Yeah.
Myself and others thinking you're doing good works, that everybody's behind you. I mean, all the things that you did to keep his name alive, you kept the man's name in a positive light. Why would anybody, why would any family member, daughter, uncle, nephew, any family member want to stop that? That doesn't make any sense.
It's like I said before, I said in the early part of this conversation, egotistical, ego is involved. She was his daughter. Now, he had a son, Paris, and another son, Paul. Paris, who I would thought would have been in charge of all that, he was in jail, serving 17 years in jail. He couldn't have done nothing. He remembered me. As a little kid, he remembered me. And how he remembered that, we were singing at, we were performing at a club in Florida. I forgot the name of the club. It slipped in my mind anyway. It was in Miami, Florida. And I had a part in the show where Eddie was singing and he would move his lips and it would be me singing. And we did that. And sure enough, his little son, said, that's not my daddy. That's Jimmy Dugan. he pulled the lid off, you know. But he didn't know any better. He didn't know any better. You know, he saw his father singing it so many times, so many years. So he just said it. That's not my dad.
Well, his voice was going toward the end, right? His voice was going toward the end,
well,
right?
I wouldn't think toward the end. Yeah, man. He had lung cancer. They took his lung, one lung. And,
right.
Man, it hurt me, man. You're talking about something.
Well, he couldn't sing toward the end, right? He was trying to sing, but he couldn't sing.
But he did what he can do till he couldn't do it no more.
Right.
He did what he did till he couldn't do it no more. That's all I can say, and that ends that. But, yeah,
wow.
he passed with lung cancer. And are you ready for this? He went home on my birthday.
Wow. Is that information? That's been the bell, man. That's serious, man. He went home on your birthday. That's how close he got, man. God works in mysterious ways. I mean, he was telling you how close y'all were.
Don't tell me. Come on now.
Wow. I mean, you're talking about really something profound for him to die on your birthday. Oh, my God.
He went home. No, he went home. He was buried on my birthday, October 10th.
Wow. On your birthday. So he was, the burial was on your
birthday.
That's still profound. It's profound, man.
Same thing.
Did you get a chance to go to the funeral?
Words,
was you at the funeral? Was you there?
Yeah, indeed I was. I didn't miss that, brother. That was my main man. My main man.
Wow.
Man. I didn't miss that. I didn't miss that.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to the daughter one-on-one? Did you ever get a chance to sit down and have a meeting with her one-on-one?
That might have made a difference.
That might have made a difference. If you got a chance to speak to her one-on-one, that might have made difference because she had no idea how close she was to her father.
She didn't know. Look, I was close to Robert, Charles, and Clarence. That's his three brothers. It was nothing I wouldn't do without getting in contact with them to let them know what I was doing. Like the left hand don't let the right hand know. I did not leave them. I let them know what I was doing, the time and place I was doing it, where it's going to be. I sent a draft of what I was doing. They loved it. They said, Jimmy, okay, seriously. But some people you just can't reach. You don't try to reach them. And what I did, it just took the air out of me. It took the life out of me.
That had to hurt, though, Jimmy. It had to hurt tremendously
when you put
all that work and building his legacy up and talking about the Keeping Trucking Awards and,
you know,
Eddie Kendrick's Day. And somebody comes along that don't know you. I can't figure why she wouldn't reach out to you and pick the phone up
money.
And call you.
Yeah, but listen, she was money hungry. You know what that is? She
mm-hmm.
she prays and worship money. She money hungry. She was a young girl, man. She wasn't even born. She wasn't even born
mm-hmm.
at the time when I was with her coming up. But she had placed in her mind and in her heart, I was no good. She had to have placed that in her heart. That
wow.
I was no good. I was doing something that's going to hurt him. I wouldn't do anything to hurt that man.
Anything to keep his name's not his name is no longer a household name today.
Come on.
He does not
Come
have
on.
A legacy. When you say Eddie Kendrick, there's no, like you said,
you know
there's no Eddie Kendrick
like? Today. They say Eddie who?
They don't know the man because if it wasn't for you was keeping it alive. You was keeping his legacy alive. And what is she doing now for his legacy? There's no, the Temptations now, even Otis Williams, the Temptations that he has now doesn't have the flame or the charismatic ability of a Temptation. It doesn't seem like it's a Temptation no more.
They don't. Even
Dennis Edwards' Temptation Review was more of a Temptation Review than Otis' Temptation.
Credit for it. And didn't get no credit for it. But anyway, that's a different story. But like I said, dealing with Eddie was—I look at it like it was a wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't get no money. I don't look at money and everything. I don't look at everything with a dollar sign on it. I don't. What I do is do my best at what I'm doing. You know, the money will come later. It'll come.
No question. Let's switch gears a minute and tell us about the Due Star Entertainment. What was Due Star Entertainment? What was that? You were the founder of Due Star Entertainment. What was that?
Uh-huh. It's an entertainment management company, in which Due Star Entertainment represents the Young Senators Reloaded. We back out again, the Reloaded. Young Senators Reloaded. And they handle all of our stuff, all of our business stuff under Due Star Entertainment.
So is the Young Senators back together today in 2021?
Yes. It's not that many of us, because some of us made that transition, you know, and it's just the idea of just carrying on, just get other people to replace some and just carry it on. And it's still in existence, because just about a month or so ago, I got an award. It said the Young Senators 2020 award, a big plaque. I got an award. I don't know what it's for, but I appreciate it.
Oh, you appreciate it. Anytime you give any kind of recognition, I appreciate all you have done to contribute to the music industry. To contribute to the music industry, but also the history that you have in the fabric of America, man. You was part of America and a part of a singing group, a person who was in a singing group that was a legend. And then you had the vision to keep that man's name alive, and you did it on a professional scale where people came out celebrate the Eddie Kendricks Day. So now, in 2021, there's no day. There's no more Eddie Kendricks Day in 2021. No. That's sad.
But I'm going to start it back. You know, you just gave me motivation to start it back.
Mm-hmm.
You just gave me motivation to start it back up again.
Yeah, because people remember the man. And he did good works. I mean, he was an excellent singer, tenor. I mean, it's like, you know what's so sad? I'm going to tell you what's really ridiculous. Washington, D.C. is where Marvin Gaye was born.
Come on.
And there is nothing in this city celebrating him.
No. I agree with that.
That's sad. There was a white man that had a bar and restaurant on U Street. He named it Marvin's, and no black people went to the bar. You believe that?
Good gracious, no.
No, he had a bar, man. He closed it during the pandemic, but he named it after Marvin Gaye. He met Marvin Gaye over in Europe. They became friends, and he opened up a restaurant with a jazz club on U Street across from the Reed Center, named it Marvin's. And no black people, white people went. White people came, but no black people came to support that bar.
I didn't know that.
And it's closed now. So what you were doing, Jimmy, by you honoring a man like Eddie Kendricks, you were doing something that you didn't have to do, and you did it from your heart. There was no money in it.
You're keeping his legacy alive.
So you should restart it.
You know, Motown, that he was a part of Motown Records. Eddie was suing them because he was making no money, no royalties. He wouldn't get no royalties. And I didn't believe it. All the money they made, and he didn't get nothing. But Eddie had a million-dollar lawsuit pending against Motown for his passing. And I thought, I'm going to have a hard time trying to get some product from Motown. I would always get CDs and compliment some Motown records, and I would always ask questions. If somebody has the right answer, then I give them a CD compliment some Motown. So I thought Motown would be up my butt and say, we ain't giving you nothing. Motown was very supportive of what I'd done. They were very, 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 very extremely just anything I asked for. You know, they had the Temptations had the Empress of Soul CD. You remember the Empress of Soul?
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, that cost a whole lot of money. If you go out and buy that, they sent me. They said, how many Empress of Soul do you want? And it's follow me. All this is free.
Wow.
It's tax write-off, but it's free. I won't have to pay a dime out of my pocket. I say, 10. 10. So when they send me the 10, I will give one to a person who will ask the right answer, you know, question. I will give them that for something, just give them something. So I'll give them that big old CD. Man, they wouldn't, they, anything I asked for, Motown Records would give me. I'm serious about that. I didn't pay a dime.
That's it. When you had that kind of dedication and people wanted to support you for what you were doing, that's why, you know, what you did should have been really more celebrated and more supported.
Yeah.
Because it would have been bigger today. It would have been even bigger today. You'd have had corporations come on board, sponsors come on board. You know, people in the record industry, his friends would have came on board. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
now, that's like
when
David Ruffin died, they had a big funeral.
Yeah.
You know, people came out to woodwork. The singers came out. You know, they came out, and David, he died in his 50s, so people were coming out. And you know, but somebody like Emmy Kendricks, if she wouldn't have stopped you from doing what you were doing, and you kept doing
like
it would have got bigger every year.
But, you know, it ain't over yet. That's how I look at it. It's not over yet. I just she had to do that to stop me so I get my second win.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it. I thought about it plenty of times. But I'm going to start it back up again.
I agree with you. Start it back up. Do what you do. I tell people whatever your passion in life is, whatever you're good at, whatever you want to do, do it. And don't let nobody stop you, and don't let nobody discourage you. Because it's you. I tell people I've been publishing now for 45 years. There was times when I wanted to stop. There was time when I wanted to say, what am I doing this for? But why stop? I said, I'm going to figure out ways to reinvent myself, to keep doing it and keep
ride
doing
it
and
all
keep
the way
doing
out.
It.
Yeah.
And I ride it on. And then I started the podcast 20 years ago. And now the podcast is reinvented. I reinvented the podcast. It's called Pulling Your Eyelids Open. I'm blessed to have a guest like you on. Who has information that can open people's eyes. Just the little time you've been talking now, you have opened people's eyes about Eddie Kendricks. What have you been doing for the last 10 years? What have you been doing now with your passion in your life for the last 10 years? Are you retired now? What are you doing now?
No. I've been singing for the last 10 years. I put together, I renamed the group, the Young Senators Reloaded. Reloaded. We coming back. We reloaded. And I've been going out doing shows.
Wow.
Doing performances,
doing
Eddie Kendrick songs and spreading a little sunshine. You know, that's all we've been doing, that I've been doing. Just spreading a little sunshine.
Tell us about how to get in touch with you. Tell us how to get in touch with you. Do you have a website, YouTube channel, Twitter account? Give us some information on how to get in touch with you.
Sure. The Young Senators at AOL.com. Got that?
Excellent. I got that. Yeah. Young Senators at AOL. That's your email address. Okay. What about your YouTube channel or your Facebook page?
Well, that's in the process of being worked on. It's the Eddie Kendricks. I'm sorry about that. The Young Senators Reloaded at AOL.com.
Okay.
Young Senators Reloaded at AOL.com. And that gives you a background.
Well, you have been such an inspiration to so many other singers, and you have your own life has been grounded. Tell us a little bit about how you. I remember when I met you, we were out somewhere.
I remember too. Yeah.
And you said to me, "I want to introduce you to my wife." Tell us about that love story, about how you have the pleasure of being married. And you have been married for about 6 years now, 7 years? How long has it been, 6, 7 years?
I forgot, 10 years. I don't know. Some,
10 years ago, but I remember when you wasn't married and you met your wife and you were such joy and such elated aspect, and you said, I want you to meet my wife. Tell us about how that love story came about.
Man, it's hard. I can tell you, I mean, laugh, but it's hard. You got to know how to balance it. And when I met her, she was in broadcast herself. She was on KYS radio station and another radio station, not simultaneously, but a couple of years she was with what's that? I forgot the name. Where Donnie Simpson used to be on. What is that?
WHUR.
No.
WKYS. That's the one he was on. WKYS.
Yeah, right? Yeah, KYS. She was on KYS. And here I was a little black-faced minstrel, you know, singing, and doing things. And she was a pod producer of a program, television program. And one day we did a show. The young senators did a TV show. And I saw her over there. She was looking, and I looked back at her. And Warnell, the bass player, he said, "Hey, man, why that girl keep looking at you?" I said, "I don't know." So finally, what I did, I got enough nerve to go, I said, "Man, that girl ain't going to talk to me. She's a red bone," you know, anyway. Mm-hmm. And I went over there and talked to her, and sure enough, we clicked. You know, we clicked. And I asked her to go out with a date for me. I had to do a show, and she said she'll go. And that's one thing how it ended up. And I ended up, now you're not going to believe this. You're not going to believe this. This is a true story. Now, if you think I'm lying, I should get my wife to tell you how to, wait a minute. Hold on, just one second. Hey, baby, come here. Come on. Here she is. Tell Russell how we met.
How we met?
Yeah.
Wow. When I was 12, when I first saw you,
yeah,
or when
go,
I was...
Go
there. Hi, Russell.
How are you? Welcome aboard. This is the Pulling Your Eyelids Open, and we have the wonderful, your husband, Jimmy Dugan. But we're talking about a segment of his life where he found love with you. And that changed his life tremendously because of the love he had for you and that long marriage that you have now. But we're talking about how he met you and how y'all got married.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I think we were meant to be together.
Yeah, we're still together.
Yeah, because I caught a glimpse of Jimmy, like, all through life. First time I saw him was age 12. I didn't even know who I was looking at, but he was on stage performing. It was at the Howard Theater. I was with my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a talent show. And anyway, I didn't even remember that. But then I saw him again when I worked at WDCA-TV, Channel 20.
Channel 20.
Yeah, I was a producer there, and the young senators came to perform on, I think, the Barry Richards show back then. Yeah,
TV.
So I remember seeing Jimmy then, and I think that's when we exchanged phone numbers, right? And so that was when I was in my 20s. But I didn't really see Jimmy that much. I was just aware of him, you know, and he would call me every now and then over the years. But then we... reconnected over Facebook.
Yeah.
And we started talking, and we had a date, and one thing led to another. And what, Jimmy, you proposed, I think, within a month after we got together.
Yeah.
That was in 2012. Mm.
Wow, a month. He knew what he wanted right away. He proposed within a month. That was serious.
Yes, it was, and I turned him down.
Indeed, she did.
I turned him down, but then he tried two more times. That third time was a charm. I said, okay, and we got married April, 2 months later.
Wow.
We've been married since 2012, but 9 years now.
9 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nine years.
It's a marriage that works. It's a marriage that works. And you're right there beside him. You're supporting him and his goals, his endeavors, and this beautiful thing. So I want to commend you on your success and your marriage. And to find love, to have love during the pandemic is tremendous. Ooh. People don't realize how important it is to have someone during the pandemic, someone who loves you enough to be in the house with you.
Come on, man.
Mask-free.
You know,
come on, during the pandemic, you can't beat that with a stick. Dude, that's a love. That's the truth. I tell everybody, the true test of love is who is taking the mask off for you in your presence, in your house, with you,
uh-huh.
if that's not love, then here's all of me. Because that person loves you for real. I mean, that's a real love. And because you can't, I mean, you can't see nobody. I haven't even seen my grandkids or anybody, my children, because I'm waiting for the thing to subside. I'm 72 years old. I can't underline conditions. I can't take the risk. But if you were lucky to be grandfathered in before the pandemic, you was living with somebody or you were married to that person before the pandemic, and when the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. You looked at that person in the eye and said, guess what? We're here for the long haul. We are mask-free, loving people. We love each other so much, we'll ride it out together. That person loves you because ain't nobody going to do it except they really love you. That's what I tell people, man. The pandemic is real.
Yes, sir. Yes,
we appreciate it. But, well, Jimmy, this has been a pleasure. This has been an honor to really have you on the air.
Thank you, man.
And to really, what we call, pull the eyelids open. And I want to congratulate you on everything that you've done and everything that you succeeded. I want to switch gears again, Jimmy, because here's another thing
that really has
been an impact on your life and has really sustained your life. And I want to talk about when you discovered Allah. That ring you have on your finger, you don't see that ring on many people's fingers today.
No,
tell us about when you became...
That
ring, when you put that ring on your finger, and when people see that ring, they don't understand the essence of what that ring stands for and who the Honorable Elijah was during that year of 60s. Mm-hmm. I was in Philadelphia when the Muslims was, the Nation of Islam was big. Tell us about how you discovered that or became serving Allah and what that changed your life.
You know, I first got that ring. I don't mean, it's no fun intended, but I found that ring at a pawn shop. Someone had sold it for a profit or whatever you call it, but it was meant for me to have it. It was meant for me to have that ring. I bought it and placed it on my finger. And I had it on my finger until, I got married and had to place the wedding band with that. Mm-hmm. It was replaced with my wedding band. So it's like, I don't know. It's just a wonderful thing came over me. And through that wonderful thing taught me how to appreciate things. It taught me, even though we're going through this pandemic, it taught me to be strong and have faith in God. That I have. That's all I have is faith in God. I had faith in God when I formed the Eddie Kingston Memorial Foundation. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was doing, but I know somebody who knew how to put it together. And what I did, I asked him to help me. No physical being, nothing like that. And he helped me. God helped me put the whole thing together.
Excellent, man. Excellent, excellent, excellent. I tell you, you are living proof that God exists.
Yes, sir.
When they see they can see the essence of God, because not only are you a server of God, but you also a server of your family, your wife.
Yes,
you are a representative of what a man should be. I mean, what I tell people today is when people see you, they should see the essence of a man. I want look at me and say, that's a man. That's someone who cares about people. That's someone who served the community, who gave his life and made himself presentable to people. That's why I'm so in awe with celebrating 45 years of publishing. And I'm reaching out to people like yourself.
Right, you got a right to listen. That's a wonderful, wonderful accomplishment. Who do you know? It's not too many people do the same job that you do. It's not that many. Who do you know been in business that long?
Here's another thing that I did, and I tell people that I was proud of doing, was in 45 years, I gave out 450 Oscars and awards. I served and honored 450 people. 450 people. Very few people didn't get something, that we
I know.
Honored.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I appreciate that. But what I want to do right now, Jimmy, it's been an honor, and I keep telling you this, an honor and a pleasure, but I want you to give us your closing statements because we're winding down to the time now. So give us your closing statements, what you want us to know or what you want us to do or anything that you want us to come from your heart right now.
Put God first, Allah first, everything else to follow. Put him first. Put God first. Even through this pandemic we're in right now, why is it that I don't go out nowhere? I don't rip and run nowhere. Why? Allah keeps me in his mercy. I'm right here at home. Even my wife can tell you, I ain't doing nothing to nobody. I'm minding my business and leaving well enough alone. That's one thing I can truly say. Put God first in your life and everything else to follow.
Well, I tell you, I'm going to take that advice because I take that
advice anyway.
I put God first in my life.
That's why I'm
still here. And I'm going to continue to do good works, but I'm continuing to keep in touch with you. We're going to be, when this thing is over, we're going to make sure that you come to some events and make sure that people know that the Young Sentences Reloaded is truly reloaded. Again, all I do is make a line. It's been a pleasure, a wonderful and wonderful, Jimmy Dugan. This is pulling your eyelids open every morning from 10
and
to 11.
And your earlobes open.
And your earlobes open. I love it, man. Pulling your eyelids open and keeping your earlobes
and your earlobes open.
Clean.
Because you miss something. You won't miss anything.
Won't miss anything.
Like having fun.
I like that, man. I like that. So, again, I'll see you tomorrow morning. Go to my archives on BeThereMagazine.com or go to my Facebook page.
Okay.
Look at some of the past interviews. I've been interviewing people from the senators, from the presidents, from the singers, people who have been incarcerated. I've done it all for the last 45 years.
Yeah.
Again, we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Keep
on trucking, baby.
Keep on boogie down.